The date on our calendar this Shabbos is Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. And unfortunately, that is one of the days in the year in which we commemorate the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So this year, because it falls out on Shabbos, we will be commemorating it in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. We will be commemorating that on Sunday. So I thought it was an appropriate time to veer off a little bit from our Pirkei Avos, even though we just started. But it's an ongoing conversation for a lifetime. So just to spend some time really focusing on the meaning of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, understanding what it is that we do, and then to talk about the questions that I get inevitably every single year on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, so we can save ourselves a lot of time trying to get in touch with the rabbi, and we'll just discuss them here. So let us just give some of the background. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is one of the four public fast days that we observe in commemoration of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. What happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is a very good question, but primarily the reason why we observe it is because we understand that on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz was the day on which the walls of Yerushalayim were broken, and that is when the enemy army was able to come in and destroy ultimately the Beis HaMikdash 3 weeks later on Tisha B'Av. So all of that began on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz when they broke the walls. The Roman emperor at the time was Titus HaRasha. Titus really began as the general of the Roman army. He was the son of Vespasian. After his father passed away, he takes over as the Roman emperor. He comes up to Yerushalayim, lays a siege around the city, and ultimately that siege that began in the middle of Chodesh Nisan ended on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. So you have Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, 3 months. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz finally. Titus HaRasha is successful in breaking the walls of Yerushalayim. Took him another 3 weeks until they actually got to the Beis HaMikdash. And then, unfortunately, on Tisha B'Av is when the entire Churban Beis HaMikdash happened. What we talk about on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is the destruction of the Bayis Sheni. Just so we have a context of what we're referring to, this is the day on which we commemorate the destruction of the Bayis Sheni. And that was destroyed by Titus HaRasha, like we mentioned. But the truth is that already in the Bayis Rishon, already the first Beis HaMikdash, the Churban happened on Tisha B'Av as well, which is an amazing phenomenon, that both Batei Mikdash were destroyed on the same day. Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni were both on Tisha B'Av. The walls of Yerushalayim by Bayis Sheni were destroyed on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. And the Navi Yirmiyah tells us that in the first Beis HaMikdash, the walls of Yerushalayim were destroyed on the ninth day of Tammuz. So the Navi says as follows, B'chodesh Arvi B'tisha L'chodesh. It's not on here, but in the Chodesh Arvi, which is Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, that's the fourth month. So in the fourth month, on the ninth day, V'yechazak HaRav Ba'ir, there was a famine in the city of Yerushalayim. They were being laid under siege. V'lo haya lechem la'am ha'aretz. Nobody had any food. V'atibaka ha'ir v'chalanshe ha'malcham ha'baruchu. Finally, the walls of Yerushalayim were broken through. All of the Jewish community runs away. Vayetzu min ha'ir laila. So the Talmud Yerushalmi writes a very surprising comment, and that is that although the Navi Yirmiyah tells us that this happened on the ninth day of Tammuz in the Bayis Rishon, the Yerushalmi says it's really inaccurate. That's not exactly what happened. There was just so much going on at the time, so much confusion, and therefore the Navi Yirmiyah recorded it on the wrong day in which it actually happened, which is a surprising comment. The Yerushalmi says that Yirmiyah really meant to say that it happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz in the first Beis HaMikdash as well. So that's an amazing phenomenon, that both in the Bayis Rishon as well as in the Bayis Sheni, the actual Churban took place on Tisha B'Av, and the month of Tammuz was also a very significant time, because either in the second Beis HaMikdash the walls were destroyed, in the first Beis HaMikdash either it was on the ninth or on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. If you look in the Sukkim and Navi itself, you will see that Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is referred to as Tzom HaRavi. Tzom HaRavi means the fast day in the fourth month, Tammuz. And Tzom HaChamishi that the Navi refers to is Tisha B'Av. That's the fast day that we observe in the fifth month of the year. So that's Tzom HaRavi and Tzom HaChamishi. As we know, we observe Tisha B'Av very differently than we observe Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Tisha B'Av, as we know, is a 24-hour fast day. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz only starts in the morning with sunrise, or should I say with dawn, Alos HaShachar, and it ends at night. We don't have a 24-hour period in which we commemorate the loss. Number two, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is really the onset of the period of Avelus, of the 3 weeks. that continue to intensify as the weeks go on and get closer to Tisha B'Av, that really all begins on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. There's a major question as to whether it begins the night of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Is someone allowed to have a wedding? This year it's not really relevant because nobody would make a wedding on Friday night or on Matzoi Shabbos, but in a regular year when Shiva Asar B'Tammuz falls on any other day in the calendar, would we be able to have a wedding the night of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz or not? That is a very big discussion, a very big question. This year, again, it is not really relevant. So, what's interesting to note is that the Mishnah Maseches Tainus tells us that Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is commemorating not only the breaking of the walls of Yerushalayim, but there are five terrible things that happen on the day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and all of those are commemorated equally on this very special day. Number one, says the Gemara, you go back in history to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. What month of the year was the Torah given in? Sivan. So the Torah was given in the month of Sivan. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai. We have this experience at Har Sinai with the entire Jewish community, the Aseres Hadibros. And then on Zion Sivan, Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up to heaven. He tells the Jewish people, I will be there for 40 days and 40 nights. I want that God should teach me the entirety of Torah. And then I will be back. I will then relay all the messages to you. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up. If you do very simple math, 40 days from Zion Sivan turns out to be Yud Zion Tammuz. That's Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. That was the day Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to come back, was Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos Daf Pei Tes tells us that on the 16th day of Tammuz, which was the day before Moshe Rabbeinu was meant to come back, on the 16th day of Tammuz, the Satan came and decided to play a trick on the Jewish community. And he shows them an image in heaven of Moshe Rabbeinu being carried on a bed with all of the heavenly angels carrying his bed, carrying his coffin. And the Jewish community understood that to mean that Moshe Rabbeinu has died and he will never return. Immediately in response to that, they go to Aaron HaKohen, who is the brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say, "Asei lanu Elohim asher yelchu lifaneinu." We need a new leader. Now, why they didn't think that Aaron should be the new leader is beyond me. But they said Moshe Rabbeinu is gone. Look what we see in heaven. And Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer here. He cannot provide for us anymore. We need to create some kind of new personality, some new figure in our lives. Aaron HaKohen decides to delay them a little bit, and he says, I have an idea. Everybody go home and try to get as much jewelry as you can. And he assumed that people would not be so forthcoming with their jewelry, or certainly with their spouse's jewelry, and he assumed that that would delay the process just a little bit. So he assumed it would take a few days until they all got themselves together, and little did he know that immediately everybody came running back with all of their jewelry, all their wives' jewelry, and they decided that they were ready to make an egel masecha. And they throw it into the fire, out comes this egel, and they all proclaim, Eila Elohecha Yisrael. This is the new God. Moshe Rabbeinu is gone. Now we have made for ourselves a new leader. God then tells Moshe Rabbeinu, who's up in heaven, Lech Reib Kishiches Amcha. The Jewish community has destroyed themselves. Look what happened. We just stood at Har Sinai. 40 days later, 39 days later, look what they're up to. They're serving Avodah Zarah. It's amazing when you think about the story. Klal Yisrael, 39 days after hearing God's own voice, has created an Avodah Zarah. They made an Egel Hazav, and God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you need to go down. Ki shiches amcha, because your nation has destructed themselves. They've self-corroded. Moshe Rabbeinu goes down. Vayichar af Moshe. Moshe is furious. As he comes down, he sees that there's dancing and singing around this idol. Vayashlech mi yadav. He throws down the luchos from his hands. Vayishaber osam tachas ahar. So this was the first tragedy in the history of the Jewish people that happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Moshe Rabbeinu breaks the luchos 40 days after the occasion of Kabbalah Satorah, after Matan Torah, and that is the first time in Jewish history that something terrible took place. The Gemara then says in Baba Kama, Daf Pei Beis, that the second thing that happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz many generations later was in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Every day the Torah says, we have to bring a Karban Tamid in the morning and a Karban Tamid late in the afternoon. And that is sort of the bookends of all of the service, of all of the avoda that takes place in the Beis HaMikdash. Without it, you're not allowed to bring a Karban. Before it, you're not allowed to bring a Karban after it. So every day we have the Karban Tamid in the morning and a Karban Tamid in the afternoon. At one period in history, in the Beis HaMikdash. They were not able to go outside of the walls of Yerushalayim. There was a siege, and they were unable to procure any of these animals to use as the Karban Tamid, which effectively, if that happens, you're not able to have any service in the Beis HaMikdash that day, because that is what allows us to begin the day of service in the Beis HaMikdash when we offer the Karban Tamid. So they came up with a system. They had a pulley, and they would send over money every day to people on the other side of the wall, and in return, the people would send over animals in the pulley system. I don't know what kind of pulley it was, but they would send animals back over to be used for service in the Beis HaMikdash. One fine day, says the Gemara, they sent the money over to the other side, and in return, they got two pigs, which obviously are not able to be used for the service in the Beis HaMikdash. A pig is a non-kosher animal, as we know. And there, on that occasion, was the end of the sacrificing of the Karban HaTamid, which is a really symbolic act. Once that broke down, that was really the beginning of the end, because they knew if we can no longer do service in the Beis HaMikdash by offering these animals, we're not going to have any service in the Beis HaMikdash. And that was the second great tragedy that happened on this day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Number three, the Mishnah says that Apustamus burnt a Sefer Torah in public. Nobody really knows clearly who Apustamus was. The Jewish historians have a little bit of a dispute which period in history he lived in. Some say he lived in the days of the Chashmonaim, but it's not entirely clear exactly when he was. Some say he was a Roman soldier who took a Sefer Torah, burnt it in public in the street. But whatever it was a terrible story that also took place on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. And finally, the Talmud Yerushalmi writes that on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, He'amidu tselem b'heichal. Our enemies were successful in putting an idol in the confines of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And that was the fifth terrible tragedy that took place. And all of this is commemorated on the fast day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. So that's what we need to keep in mind as we commemorate it. So let us just give a little bit of a history to understand why it is, as we mentioned, that Tisha B'Av for some reason starts at night and continues on till the next evening, whereas Shiva Asar B'Tammuz does not. Tisha B'Av for some reason, we have many more restrictions than we would have on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, we only fast. We don't eat, we don't drink. But we don't have many of the other restrictions. I'm sure many people in the room have showered on a public fast day. Anybody's done that? On Tisha B'Av, we're not allowed to shower. Right? You do many kinds of things on a public fast day, and the question is, why is it that there's some kind of discrepancy between Tisha B'Av and many of the other public fast days that we observe? So let's look in Shulchan Aruch, in Arachayim, Hilchas Tisha B'Av, in Simen, Taf Kuf Mem Tes. That's number one. Number Aleph on the Sur sheet with the Shulchan Aruch tells us the following. Chayavim lehisanos b'Tisha B'Av. We have an obligation as a community to fast on Tisha B'Av, on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, on the third day of Tishrei that we know of as Tzom Gedalia, and on Asar B'Teves Mepnei Dvarim Harayim She'iru Bahem, because terrible things happen. Now, as we mentioned, Tisha B'Av was the day when both of the Batei Mikdash were destroyed. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is the day on which the walls of Yerushalayim were destroyed. What is Asar B'Teves? The Mishnah Berurah there writes in number Beis, Asar B'Teves was Bo Samach Melech Babel Nebuchadnezzar Harasha Al Yerushalayim. Asar B'Teves is commemorating the loss of the first Beis HaMikdash. That's when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the king of Babel, came and laid siege on Yerushalayim. Ve'hevia b'matzar uve'matzok, u'mizeh nimshach ha'churban. In the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, it all started with Nebuchadnezzar laying siege around Yerushalayim, and that really was the beginning of the end. So Asar B'Teves really is commemorating something that we lost with the first Beis HaMikdash. Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av are really in commemoration of the second Beis HaMikdash.
Why? They say Asar B'Teves, it's a mitzvah, you still keep it on Shabbat.
So that's an important question. We'll talk about that Asar B'Teves time maybe, but the Beis Yosef quotes an opinion of the Avodram that we don't accept anyway, but the Beis Yosef quotes an opinion of the Avodram that maybe Asar B'Teves has a different kind of rule than everything else. It's a good question why. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik has a interpretation as to why. It's really not relevant to Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, but it's a very good question. So, now we have the Jewish people suffer the loss of the Bayis Rishon, just to understand what it is that we speak about here. And I think that for those of us who might not be familiar with Tanakh, Tanakh is so important to read, and it's so moving sometimes, and you really read the original stories and you understand what exactly took place. So let's just give ourselves a little bit of a background into everything that happened from the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon until the second Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt. And we're going to read passages now from three different Nevi'im, from Yirmiyah, from Zechariah, and from the Navi Ezra. I didn't put it on the sheet because I didn't have enough room and I didn't have enough time to actually get all of this. But you can listen carefully to the story. Here, number one, we're going to read from the Navi Yirmiyah. First Beis HaMikdash is about to be destroyed. Yirmiyah gives a prophecy in advance. He tells everybody what's about to happen. The two Nevi'im that were alive at the time were Yechezkel HaNavi and Yirmiyah HaNavi. And they were telling the entire Jewish people about what was to come. And then the Navi Yirmiyah says, you're going to go into Bavel. You're going to be in Galus Bavel. That is going to be your exile for 70 years. And he says, Ko Amar Hashem Tzevakos Elokei Yisrael, God appeared to me and he asked me to share with you the following message. L'chol HaGola Asher Eglisi MiYerushalayim Bavela. I, God, am the one who sent all of you Jews from Israel, from Yerushalayim, to Babel. This is not something that happened on its own. I am the one with divine providence who sent you there. And therefore God says, Banu Batim, I want you to go there and build houses. Because that's where you belong right now. Vishvu Vinitu Ganos, I want you to plant, I want you to do as much as you possibly can to be prosperous. Ve'ichlu es piryan. Kichu Nashim, I want you to get married there, and I'd like that you should have children. And the Navi goes on and he says that you should be active members in the community in Bavel because that is where you belong. And God says, I understand that you're in Galus, but that's where you belong right now. That's where I have sent you. However, the Navi Yirmiyah then says, Kicho Amar Hashem ki lefi melos lebavel shivim shana. I want you to know that as much as God has sent you there, and as much as he wants you to be successful in that land, lefi melos lebavel shivim shana, when 70 years pass from the time that you, the Jewish community, ends up in Babel, efkod eschem, I will remember you, God says. It's only going to be 70 years, which, by the way, is not so long, but it's an entire generation. 70 years is enough time for a lot of things to happen, for a lot to change, as many of you are aware. So, 70 years is not so long in the grand scheme of Jewish history, but it is a long time as well. And Klal Yisrael is told from the outset, it's only going to be 70 years that you will be in Babel, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, V'akimosi aleichem as dvarei hatov lahashiv eschem el hamakom hazeh. God promises, don't worry, after 70 years you have the right to return. And after 70 years everyone will come back, and everybody will be here once again. You turn to the Navi Zechariah. And the Navi Zechariah was living at the time when they were trying to galvanize people to come back from Babel at the end of the 70 years and re-enter the land of Eretz Yisrael and come back to Yerushalayim. So we have a number of beautiful interpretations, explanations here in the Navi Zechariah as to what was going on at the time. So the Navi Zechariah, the very first chapter, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Ches, he says, Ra'isi halayla. He says, I had an image this evening. V'hinei ish rochev al sus adam. There's a beautiful looking person who's riding on a horse and he's standing in a beautiful background. And I said to him, what is it that you like to talk to me about? Why are you here? What is the image that you want to show me? Vayanu el hamalach Hashem ha'ome ben ha'adasim. He says, I am a servant. I am a messenger of God himself. And I have come to speak with you. V'hinei kol ha'aretz yosheves v'shoketes. Zechariah, I'm here to tell you that don't forget about Yerushalayim, don't forget about Eretz Yisrael, the land is desolate, it's quiet, nobody's there. Vayan Malach Hashem Vayomer, and he said, An matai ata lo terachem es Yerushalayim, he pleads with God and he says, how long will you neglect Yerushalayim? Ves Ara Yehuda asher za'amta zeh, shivim shana, it's been 70 years, God. And you promised Yirmiyah when we left Yerushalayim, that after 70 years we would come back. So here it all comes back full circle. Zechariah HaNavi, 70 years later, is sitting in in Bavel, and he's demanding that God's messenger speak and plead with God that it's time to go back, that the end of Galus has come, and now it's time for the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Vayan Hashem el HaMalach HaDover Bi, Dvarim Tovim, Dvarim Nechumim. God responded to him, and he says, yes, Ko Amar Hashem Shafti Li Yerushalayim Berachamim. It is time for me to come back to Yerushalayim with mercy. Beisi Yibaneba, they will rebuild my house again. Vikav Yinate Al Yerushalayim, once again, we will populate Yerushalayim and it will no longer remain desolate. So that is really the beginning of the coming back of that prophecy that started 70 years earlier with Yirmiyah HaNavi. That is really where it comes back together. And Zechariah gives hope. And he goes to the Jewish people and he says, I had this image and I had this dream and I had this conversation. And God told me that it's time to come back. And now we all need to do our part to do just that. You look in Perek Beis, which you don't have in front of you, but you can all look later in Perek Beis in Zechariah. Pasuk Yud Dalet here. Rani v'simchi bas Tzion. This is one of the Haftorahs that we read. And we say that God once again tells us that we should rejoice and we should be happy. Ki hinani ba, because God says, I'm coming again. V'shachanti v'sochech niyum Hashem. I am ready to repair our relationship. I am ready once again to have a Beis HaMikdash, and I want all of you to return. V'nilvu goyim rabim el Hashem b'yom ha'hu. On that day when we all come back, there will be nations of the world coming from all over the place to experience what it means to have a rebuilt Yerushalayim. And you read these nevuahs and you say, look how true it is today. Rani v'simchi bas Tzion, God says to all of us, you should be happy once again. Yes, you are still in Galus, but look what's happening in Yerushalayim. V'nilvu elayich goyim rabim, look how many people are coming from all over the world, be'avra kanfus ha'aretz, to make aliyah, to move back to Eretz Yisrael, to populate Yerushalayim. And not only Jews, look at the commerce, look at the industry, look at everything that's been going on. Look at the nevuah coming true in our day, the same way Zechariah HaNavi told the Jewish people then, that they should be proud and they should be happy. That is the same thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is letting all of us see here once again. In fact, the Navi here in Navi Zechariah says the famous words, Od yeshvu zekenim uzekenos berechovos Yerushalayim. V'ish mishanto v'yado. He talks about the elderly people coming back to Yerushalayim. Urechovos ha'ir yimalu. The streets of Yerushalayim will be filled again with young children playing outside. Misachkim berechovos seha. Can you not cry when you see today the streets of Yerushalayim populated with elderly people and young children all over the place, playgrounds, every block you go on, there's just, it's bustling, it's amazing. That's exactly what the Navi Zechariah prophesied. That's exactly what we experience today in our generation as well. It's amazing. And then we turn to the Navi Ezra. The Navi Ezra also was one who was responsible for the Jewish people coming back to Yerushalayim, building a Beis HaMikdash once again. And Ezra HaNavi here, in Sefer Ezra Perek Gimel, describes to us what it was like when they finally had the opportunity, after 70 years, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So everybody is gathering together. They come and contribute whatever they can. And all of them put their hard work together and build the Beis HaMikdash. Finally, when it's all done, Vayisdu Abonim Es Heichal Hashem, they finally finish building the Beis HaMikdash. Vayamidu haKohanim milubashim bechatzotros. You have the Kohanim coming out in force with all of their trumpets, with their beautiful clothing. Vahalevim, and the Levim are out there singing Shira, and David Melech Yisrael, he writes, is leading the charge, and it's an amazing scene. And he says, Vayanu bahalel vahodos laHashem. The Jewish people are so overwhelmed with gratitude. Look, we're back again. We're not stuck in Golus anymore. We have a Beis HaMikdash. God has once again accepted us. He wants us to have this relationship again. La'ashem ki tov ki li'olam chazdo al Yisrael v'chala'am. An amazing scene. He dampers it a little bit because he says, unfortunately, there were some cynics who were old enough to remember the old Beis HaMikdash, which you didn't have to be so old. All you had to be was 75, right? If you were 70, you wouldn't really remember, but you had to be 75, 80 maybe. So there were a number of Jews, he describes, who were there by the first Beis HaMikdash. Now they were seeing the celebration for the reinstitution of a Beis HaMikdash, and they said, this is not like the good old days. Same thing we have today. This is not like the good old days. We remember what it was like when we had a Beis HaMikdash. That was a real McCoy. This is a fake. So all of you are celebrating. That's because you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s. You don't know what the real thing is like. And you don't understand what you're missing. And the Gemara describes there was a lot missing in the Bayis Sheni. It was not as glorious, it was not as glamorous as the first Beis HaMikdash, but it was a very festive time. It was a very festive time. And the Navi here writes that the cries of the elderly people were drowned out by all of the tremendous celebration that was happening in the streets at the time. And now the Jewish people are faced with the following problem. 70 years we've spent in Galus. 70 years is enough time for people to forget what it is that happened in their past. Look no further than Soviet Jewry. 70 years was the whole story, basically, and an entire generation forgot everything. It was enough time to make the Jewish people forget everything, pretty much. It basically destroyed the Jewish community in 70 years. So 70 years in Galus Babel is enough time to forget everything of your past. And the Chachamim at the time when they went into Galus said, we cannot allow that to happen. We cannot allow people to forget that really what we yearn for, what we look forward to, is a return to Yerushalayim. People cannot be raised in a generation where they don't even know what Beis HaMikdash represents, what Yerushalayim is all about. And therefore they instituted that we're going to make days of public commemoration for the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We're going to observe Tisha B'Av, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Asara B'Teves, and Tzom Gedalia. Because those were terrible days in the days of the Bayis Rishon. And we want that our children, during this exile in Babel, we want that our children should remember that this is what we look forward to. And at four different times during the year, we're going to remind them that you need to always have your mind on Yerushalayim, and you need to always remember that the ultimate place where the Jews belong is in the Beis HaMikdash and in Eretz Yisrael, and not in the comforts of Galus. That's not where we belong. So they institute these public days of mourning. Come 70 years later, we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and now they present Zechariah HaNavi with the penetrating question. What do we do now? Do we continue to mourn for what used to be a tragedy? Do we continue to commemorate the loss of Bayis Rishon? Why should we do that? Now we have a Beis HaMikdash. Now life's great. Now we're back. And they come and they present the question to Zechariah HaNavi. Perek Zayin in Sefer Zechariah, he says, Vayhi Bishnas Arba L'Daryavesh. There was a discussion here. Vayishlach Beis El. They sent the following question. Leymar El HaKohanim. Ha'evke b'chodesh ha'chamishi, ha'nizar kasher asisi zeh kamashanim. We've been fasting for the last 70 years because of what happened with the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Should we continue to do that? Ha'evke b'chodesh ha'chamishi, should we observe Tisha B'Av when we have a Beis HaMikdash? That doesn't make sense. But they presented the question to Zechariah HaNavi, and they want to know what should be done. Now, number one, as an aside, besides for what Zechariah responded, which we'll get to in a minute, Zechariah also tells them an extremely important idea, and that is, Vayhi Dvar Hashem al Zechariah Leymar. Kor Amar Hashem Tzvakos Leymar. You know, you can fast an entire day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, an entire day of Tisha B'Av, an entire day of Yom Kippur, and you miss the boat. And the Navi says, don't let that be you. The Navi says, you want to know what's really important to God? It's not about the fasting. It's not about whether or not you eat or you drink. How about, says the Navi, Mishpat emes shoftu. How about being honest with each other? V'chesed v'rachamim asu ish el achiv. More important than the fasting or anything else that you're going to do is be kind and sensitive to other human beings that you interact with. Be generous with them. Almana v'yasam v'ger v'ani al ta'ashoku. Don't take advantage of those who are in your community and who are an almana or a yasam or a ger who doesn't really find a place for himself. A yasam who feels uncomfortable and feels nobody's going to advocate for him. An almana who feels that nobody's there to help her. Don't take advantage of such people. V'ras ish achiv al tachshova b'libchem. Stop thinking so negatively about others. That's more important than any of the questions you're asking. So you want to know what does God feel about still commemorating the loss of the Bayis Rishon? Before we get to that, says the Navi, let's just lay down the ground rules. What's really important to God in life is not whether or not you fast. What's more important to God is how you treat other people, how you live your life, how you interact with others. And I always think about these psukim whenever we have a fast day, because there are people who can fast and can do all the motions, everything that the Shulchan Aruch describes, and it's important to do that. But they miss the objective of everything that a fast day represents. A fast is an opportunity for introspection. It's a time, like the Navi says, more important to God is the way we treat others than the way in which we go about celebrating or commemorating a public day of mourning. And that, I think, is a very important, as an aside, a very important lesson that the Navi Zechariah says. So what happens? The Navi Zechariah is posed with this question, 70 years after the Churban Bayis Rishon, we now are back in Yerushalayim, we have a Beis HaMikdash, and the question is, what do we do with these 4 days on the calendar that were all made in commemoration of the Bayis Rishon? Answers the Navi Zechariah, this is on your sheet, number Gimel. Ko'amar Hashem Tzivakos. The Navi Zechariah comes back and he says, so I was instructed by God. Som HaRavi, which is a reference to Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. Vitzom HaChamishi, which is a reference to Tisha B'Av. Vitzom HaShavi is a reference to Tzom Gedalia. Vitzom HaAsiri is Asar B'Teves. All of those 4 days that we used to commemorate for the last 70 years, from here on in, Yir LeBeis Yehuda, LeSason, LeSimcha, LeMa'adim Tovim. From now on, we're not going to mourn anymore. We're not going to commemorate what we lost. It's time to move forward. Now we celebrate. And those 4 days are days of great celebration. Along those lines, the Rambam then says, he extends it to our times, and he says, number Dalit, Kal Hatzomos Ha'elu, all of these public fast days, Asidim Li Batel Limos HaMashiach, they will become obsolete in the days of Mashiach. V'lo od ela sheim asidim lias yamim tovim v'yimei sason v'simcha. Tisha B'Av is going to be a day of great celebration when we have a Beis HaMikdash once again. Where does the Rambam get this from? From the Navi Zechariah. The same thing that happened in the days of the Bayis Sheni, that they forgot about the past and they told everyone just focus on the future. Think about everything that we have to celebrate and all that we look forward to. Says the Rambam, the same thing will happen in the days of the Bayis HaShlishi. We're going to look only forward. We will not look at the past. We won't talk about all the terrible years of Galus, all the Churban that we suffered. We're going to look forward to a very bright future. That's what's going to happen in the days of the coming of Mashiach. That's what's going to happen when we have a Beis HaMikdash once again. So this is what happened. All those years that they had the second Beis HaMikdash, how many years was that? 420 years, the second Beis HaMikdash stood. So all those 420 years, there was no fasting on any of these public fast days. Now, says the Gemara, we suffer the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So now what? What do you fast? So Tisha B'Av makes sense, because Tisha B'Av was both the destruction of the first and the destruction of the second. So Tisha B'Av never changed. But these other 3 days were really days of commemoration for what happened in the first Beis HaMikdash, and we got rid of them. So what's the status of those days now? What do we do now? So the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches that it goes as follows. If you live at a time when there is a Beis HaMikdash, we don't fast at all. If you live at a time when there's terrible persecution, when the Jewish community is under a tremendous threat, when there's genocide, when there's terrible anti-Semitism going on all over the world, in such a generation, says the Gemara, you absolutely have to go back to the original 4 fast days, and you must keep them in the original way that they were instituted. However, says the Gemara, if you live in a generation like ours, where for the most part, we don't have a complete galus, but we don't have a complete geula either, we're somewhere in the middle. So yes, there's anti-Semitic attacks more on the rise. Somebody told me maybe they're not more on the rise, it's just that we hear about it more. I don't know, I'm not a sociologist, but whatever it is, for the most part, Jews are living very comfortable lives. At least here in America we are. And we thank our host country for allowing us to live here with all the religious freedoms that we have. So the Gemara says if you live in a generation like ours where you're somewhere in the middle, you don't have the glorious Beis HaMikdash, you don't have Yerushalayim Bivinyana, we have it slightly, but we don't have the ultimate, but you also don't have a complete tragedy of Jewish communities all over the world. So the Gemara says in generations like ours, the determination is Ratzu Mis'anim, Ratzu Ein Mis'anim. These public fast days are almost optional. If we want to observe them, we can. If we don't want to observe them, we don't. Now make no mistake, it's not up to us anymore to decide. Hundreds of years ago, it has been decided that we as a Jewish community will observe these public fast days, but the nature of the fast is completely different. And you'll understand in a minute what I mean. We have a general principle in halacha, which is whenever the Chachamim want to institute some kind of new idea, they cannot just make something up on their own. It has to have some kind of formula. It has to have some kind of precedent. The way that we refer to this term is called the Tikkun Rabbanan, Ke'ein De'oraisa Tikkun. That means, loosely translated, whenever the Chachamim want to institute anything, it has to be patterned off of something that they found in the pages of Chumash. So when the Chachamim came along after the Churban Bayis Rishon, and they institute these 4 days of public mourning, they had to look in the Torah to see, how are we supposed to observe a day of public fasting? So they look to the one and only time when the Torah describes it, which is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the only day described in the pages of Chumash as a day of fasting. So on Yom Kippur, we're not allowed to eat or drink, we're not allowed to wash, we're not allowed to put any ointments on ourselves, we're not allowed to shower, a whole bunch of restrictions on Yom Kippur. And when Tisha B'Av and Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Asar B'Teves and Som Gedaliah were originally instituted, that is the way they were instituted. That it's a 24-hour fast day, it starts at night, it goes to the next night, you're not allowed to shower, you're not allowed to bathe, you cannot eat, you cannot drink, you can't wear shoes. Everything that we observe on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur applied equally to all the other public fast days as well. Okay? So what changed? Why is it that Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is not the same as Tisha B'Av now? The answer to that is, since the nature of the fast day today is not the same as it was, because today it's only Ratzu Mis'anim, Ratzu E Mis'anim, it's almost optional to observe Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, therefore, we accepted it on our own terms and conditions. So we have accepted to observe Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, but we have said that we're not accepting not to wear shoes, and we're not accepting not to shower, and we are not accepting to have a 24-hour fast day, we are accepting it partially. And that's why Shiva Asar B'Tammuz has become different from Tisha B'Av in all of these ways. This is why, on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, we assume, let's say that, a mu'uberes umei nekes, somebody who is nursing, a woman who is pregnant, we assume they do not have to fast. The Shulchan Aruch says they don't have to. Why not? On Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, they are supposed to fast. But on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, they don't. Why don't we go ahead and evaluate and assess whether or not this person is up to fasting? Why do we assume that you just get a pass? And the answer is, because we have accepted upon ourselves the terms and conditions of this public day of mourning. We, when we accepted it originally, said that those who are not well are not going to accept to be a part of it. And automatically we've accepted that women who are pregnant or nursing are not included in our acceptance. So that's why we have many leniencies when it comes to Shiva Asar B'Tammuz that we would not find by Tisha B'Av or by Yom HaKippur. So now let's get into some very important questions that come up, I can assure you, every single public fast day, every single time, regardless, somebody asks these questions, and they're all very good questions and important questions. Let's see what we can get through in the next 15 minutes before our shiur is over. Number one, inevitably somebody always calls and asks the question about taking medication on a public fast day. That is a very important question. So we look in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, Siman Tav Resh Yud Beis, number Hey here on the source sheet, where we are told the following. Let's say on Yom Kippur you go ahead and you eat something that is Einam Ru'uyim La'achila. You eat something on Yom Kippur that is not edible. You take a piece of rubber, you're chewing on it, and you end up swallowing it. I don't know why you would do such a thing, but let's say you're that kind of person. Exactly the point, because most normal people don't do that. That's why it's not called eating on Yom Kippur. Even though it went down your throat, even though it's now in your stomach, even though it's being processed by your body, it doesn't make a difference. It's not edible, and therefore it's not considered to be a violation of the laws of Yom Kippur. Osha achal achila gasa, says the Gemara, or you eat something that is considered to be achila gasa. Now what does that mean? Very hard to define. But the Shulchan Aruch says, if you get to a point where you're katz b'mezono, meaning you ate so much on Erev Yom Kippur, and now you shove something else in down your throat that makes you vomit because you're just so full, obviously that is not called a normal way to eat, and you would not be in violation of eating on Yom Kippur. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch writes, if you eat something that is bark of a tree or a leaf from a plant, these are not normal things for people to eat, and therefore it's not a problem at all. So along those lines, there were many who feel that the same way bark of a tree and a leaf and anything else that's inedible, if they are consumed on Yom Kippur, it is not considered to be a violation of eating. So too there were many who were of the opinion, and by many I mean the Ksav Sofer, and by many I mean the Darkei Tshuva, who was the Munkacher Rebbe in Europe, and Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who were the two great giants of the previous generation, and the Chazon Ish, and many, many others. My father is of this position as well. I'm oversimplifying an extremely complicated discussion, but there were many who felt that the same way that if you eat bark of a tree or a leaf or anything else that's inedible on a public fast day, you have not violated the fast, so too if you eat some kind of medication, if you swallow a pill, that is not called an edible item. Even though the pills are made to be swallowed, but it's not food. It's not food, it's medicine. And therefore we assume that is not called to be, that is not considered to be a problem on a public fast day. Now, the obvious question that comes along with that is, can I take a drink along with the pill? Now, there are some people, miracle workers, who know how to take pills without taking a drink. I'm not one of those people. I don't know how to swallow a pill even with water. It's hard for me. But certainly, without water, I can't do it. So, are you able to take water, which is a very important question. If I'm allowed to take a pill on a public fast day, am I allowed to take water along with it? This is a very good question. Says the Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim Siman Reish Dalet, this is not in the laws of public fast days, this is rather in the laws of brachos. Number Vav, the Shulchan Aruch says, Hashose Mayim Litzamo. If you drink water because you are thirsty, Mevarech Shehakol, you make a bracha of Shehakol Niyeh Bedvaro Ule'acharav, and after you finish drinking it, you make the bracha achrona of borei nefashos rabos. Aval, says the Shulchan Aruch, quoting a Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Memhei, im chanakte umtza. Anybody knows what that means? It means if I have a bone or a piece of meat stuck in my throat, and I take a drink of water not because I'm thirsty, but rather because I try to cough it out and I can't get it out. This is not talking on a fast day, on a regular day of the week. I take a cup of water because I need to wash something down my throat. There says the Shulchan Aruch, Eino mevarech lo lefanav v'lo la'acharav. You do not require a bracha on that water when the only reason you're drinking it is because you need to get something down that is stuck in your throat or get it out. You would not have to make a bracha on such water. So, that is exactly synonymous to our case. You drink water because you want to take down a pill. Not because you're thirsty, but because, so to speak, you have something stuck in your throat. Now, it's not stuck in my throat yet, but it's about to be stuck in my throat. So I'm taking the water not because I'm thirsty. I'm taking the water because I want to help and assist myself get the pill down the way I normally do. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion, or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said the same thing. If you're taking a little bit of water on a public fast day, and for Yom Kippur you have to ask a different question. But when we're talking about Shiva Asar B'Tamuz certainly, and Tisha B'Av as well, which are only Midrabanan, if you're taking the water only because you want to help yourself get a pill down that you need, that is not called drinking. The same way you wouldn't make a bracha on that water, and you would not make a bracha Rishona or a bracha Achrona, so too, they argue, you would not have to make a bracha on this water on a fast day, and therefore it would not be considered drinking in terms of breaking your fast either. So you'd be allowed to take water. However, whenever I take a cup of water when I have a pill, I end up finishing the whole cup. I don't know if most people are like that. If you're one of those people, this obviously doesn't apply to you, or you have to make sure that you stop after the water that's necessary to get it down. So if you're only going to take the water that's necessary to get the pill down, no problem on a public fast day, no bracha required on any day of the week, but if you're the kind of person that finishes off the whole cup, then you need to be careful on a public fast day, and on any other day you need to make a bracha as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear.
Is it a pill that you would be saying, or is it that you want to help yourself continue to fast and you need to take something?
So that's a very excellent question. So what does it mean when we say you're allowed to take a pill on a public fast day? There are some people who have chronic illnesses and need to be regulated by pills. Obviously, those pills go without saying. We need to take those. If you're on an antibiotics that requires you to take over a certain period of time, also you shouldn't be skipping a day. You have to take the pills and you should take it with water as well. However, your question is, what if I want to take an Advil? And I want to take it because I have such a headache and I'm going to spend the entire day in bed. Am I allowed to do that? Yes, you would be allowed to do that because, once again, you're in pain, you're uncomfortable, there's something wrong. It would not be an issue at all. If it's Yom Kippur again, I advise you to ask your own question. Yom Kippur is a little bit different, but when we're talking about these public fast days, that would be permissible. A very good question. Thank you for bringing it up. There's a fascinating discussion in the Ramah where he talks about handling and touching food on a public fast day. Now, this is a very interesting question. You're all looking at me like I'm fell off the moon, but the Ramah is actually the one who fell off the moon. He discusses the issue. So number Zion, the Ramah in Hilchos Tisha B'Av talks about it, and he says the following. Mutter liga b'yom ha-kippurim ba'ochlim u'mashkim. On Yom Kippur, I have young children at home, I need to feed them, so I bring out breakfast in the morning, I serve them lunch in the afternoon, and obviously we all handle food on Yom Kippur, even though we're not allowed to eat it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, totally permissible, no problem at all. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have to be afraid that while I'm serving my child breakfast in the morning, or while I'm getting dinner ready for the post-fast meal, we don't have to be concerned that maybe I'm going to go ahead and eat some of the food that I'm handling. Okay, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Why? Why do you not have to be concerned? Says the Magen Avraham, how come on Pesach, if somebody comes and gives me a box of cookies to hold, I'm not allowed to handle it because we're concerned maybe you'll eat it. And when it comes to Yom Kippur, we're not concerned. What's the difference? Chametz on Pesach, you're not allowed to eat. And you're not allowed to eat food on Yom Kippur. Chametz on Pesach, you're not allowed to handle at all. Food on Yom Kippur, you are allowed to handle and we're not concerned. What is the difference? Says the Magen Avraham, I'll tell you the difference. The difference is that on Pesach, you're eating other things. So we're concerned. If you're going to be nibbling on this and nibbling on that, and now you have a box of cookies in front of you, you might inadvertently also nibble from that as well. So it's going to get confusing when you have a bunch of different items in front of you. One of them happens to be Pesach stick, one of them is Chametz stick, and you're eating all of them. You're concerned maybe you're going to stick your hand into the wrong one, and therefore we say, Pesach, you cannot have any Chametz around, you can't handle Chametz, we're afraid you're going to eat it mistakenly. But on Yom Kippur, when you're not eating anything, so you know to stay away from food. That's what the Magen Avraham explains. And the Taz says, no, that is not the understanding. The Taz says the understanding is because Emas Yom HaKippurim Alav. This is a din that applies only to Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is a day when everybody has a different mindset. Yom Kippur is a day when everyone is concerned, when everyone is trembling. Nobody would make a mistake on Yom Kippur and eat food. And there's a major difference between the Taz and the way he understands this and the Magen Avraham. What is the difference? Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av. Am I allowed to handle food on a public fast day that is not Yom Kippur? So the Taz would argue no. Why? Because you're not afraid. Yom Kippur is a day that's the exception to the rule. I'm afraid of Yom Kippur. Of course I'm not going to eat by mistake on Yom Kippur. But any other day of the year, I've seen many people on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz who do all kinds of things. They don't take it so seriously as we should. They don't take Tisha B'Av as seriously as they should. And therefore, since it's not a serious day, as unfortunately it should be, writes the Taz, you have no right to handle food because we're concerned you're going to come to eat it. You're not in a different mindset on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. I'm sorry, on Tisha B'Av and Shavuos HaBetamos. However, the Magen Avraham argues, that's not correct. The reason why you're allowed to handle food on Yom Kippur is a practical reason. Because you're fasting anyway. You're not eating anything. You're not going to make a mistake. And that applies equally to Shavuos HaBetamos. You're not going to make a mistake. You're fasting. There's no other food around that you're eating, so therefore you're not going to eat this. And therefore, that would apply to Shiva'as HaBetamos as well. So this is a very interesting question. As we know, I think the general position is that we handle food on a public fast day. And the question is why? It's a very good question. But it seems that we have rejected the position of the Taz, and we have accepted the understanding of the Magen Avraham, which allows us to handle food on Yom HaKippur. On all of these public fast days. Now, there are many people who wonder whether or not they're allowed to have a coffee or a breakfast before the fast starts. Anybody does that? You wake up early in the morning before the fast begins and you have a coffee. So that's a very important question. Are we allowed to do that or not? Now, it happens to be now, the fast begins very early. So when we have a fast day, let's say Asar B'Teves, when it's in the middle of the winter, so it's okay, you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you can have your coffee. It's a little bit easier. Today, when Alos HaShachar is probably at 4 something, I don't know, you're going to have to wake up at what? What time is Alos HaShachar? 4:39. You looked into it? So you're going to have your coffee. So you're going to have your coffee before 4:39. Now, to make today's coffees is a whole avoda. It doesn't take 3 minutes. So you're going to have to wake up at 3:30 in the morning to get your order of coffee exactly the way you want it to be, and to have the breakfast and the bagel exactly the way we in this community need to have our bagels and our coffee. So you got to wake up very early. So it's a different discussion. But are we allowed to do that? Are we allowed to eat in the morning after we've gone to sleep at night? Are we allowed to actually eat in the morning? This is a very important question. Okay, I think most people who do this don't stay up till 3 in the morning. They probably go to sleep and wake up at 3 in the morning. So that's the question. Do we have a right to do that or not? The Gemara Maseches Tainus Daf Yud Beis discusses this point. The Shulchan Aruch talks about it as well. And the Shulchan Aruch says that if you went to sleep at night and you had no intention of waking up early the next morning, you are not allowed to eat. For all intents and purposes, we assume the fast begins once you go to sleep. You have accepted upon yourself. It is now Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. If somebody asked last night, if I set an alarm for 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm clearly showing that I have intent to eat in the morning. I don't normally set an alarm at 3 in the morning. But let's say, for example, you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep. I was planning on sleeping all night, or, like happened to me this week, somebody called me at 1 o'clock in the morning for something. I wasn't planning on being up, but I was woken. Ended up spending till 6 in the morning out of the house with this person. It was very interesting. But if you have a situation like that, where you were not planning on waking up, but you were woken, and now you say, you know what? I'm so exhausted. It happens to be when I was woken up, I was so disoriented, I just went down to the kitchen to have something to eat because I had to wake myself up. And if that should happen on the night of Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have a right to eat. If you had no intent at all to wake up and you just happened to be woken for some reason, you would not be able to have your coffee, you would not be allowed to eat breakfast, because for you, the fast has begun once you went to sleep. What?
Make sure before you go to sleep, you have your intent.
Yes.
In case you get up.
So that's very easy. You have every right to say before you go to sleep, or to have in mind that even if I don't sleep through the night and I wake up for whatever reason, I would like to have a drink. That's something that's okay. Now, obviously, everybody has to make sure that you follow the right zmanim. Everybody has to know what time the fast actually begins and when the zman iser achila starts as well. But generally, the Shulchan Aruch says if you don't have that in mind before, we assume that the baseline understanding is that the fast begins once you fall asleep the night before. This happens every fast as well. People come downstairs in the morning, and the routine is that they make a coffee, or they have a banana, or they eat breakfast, whatever it might be. And Shiva Asar B'Tamuz morning, you wake up and you do your regular routine. And you didn't go to shul, so you didn't realize that they were saying slichos. And you forgot all about the fact that today is Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. You have a million other things on your mind. So that's a good question. Number one, you shouldn't have a million other things on your mind on Shiva Asar B'Tamuz or Tisha B'Av, but it happens. It happens. Let's make sure to make time at some point on Shiva Asar B'Tamuz to remember why today is Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. That's first of all. What happens if you make that mistake? Innocent mistake. So people often make the mistake and think that once I ate and I broke the fast, so I'm done. That is categorically wrong. Shulchan Aruch says, if you mistakenly ate on a public fast day, you must continue to fast. If you mistakenly ate on a public fast day, you stop eating whatever you're in the middle of, whenever you remember, and you continue the rest of the day as if you were fasting. It doesn't give you a right to continue on eating. If you broke your fast, you need to continue to fast. On a public fast day as well, we insert into mincha only the tefillah of Aneinu. It's a special insert only for those who are fasting. So for those who are not well, for those who are in a position where they're unable to fast for whatever condition they have, and you have to ask your own question, but whoever is in that situation, you do not recite Aneinu. Even though the rest of the Jewish community might be fasting, you only recite Aneinu in Shmona Esrei if you are observing the fast day, if you are actually fasting. But if not, you do not. Why is it that we only say Aneinu in Mincha? Why don't we say it in Shachris as well? We're fasting in the morning as well. So Rashi says the reason why we don't say it in Shachris is because it might turn out that you won't finish up the day. If you don't feel well, you're going to end up eating. And then it turns out, Nira Kimishaker, it looks like you were saying something that wasn't totally accurate in your davening in the morning, because you said, God should answer us b'yom tzom tani seinu. God should answer us because we are fasting. Now, you happen not to be fasting because you already broke it. So therefore, says Rashi, we reserve this tefillah vanenu for only mincha, because mincha is already later in the day, and we assume if you've made it that far, you're going to make it for the rest. And therefore you have a right to say the piyut, the tefillah vanenu that we add in on a public fast day, but we do not say it in shachris. Let me just close with the words of the Rambam. I see it's 10:30. The Rambam writes in the fifth parak in Hilchas Tainius, when he frames for us what a tainus, what a fast day is supposed to be about, and this is really a guiding light for what everything should really be about. Says the Rambam, Yesh yamim shekol Yisrael mis'anim bahem mipnei atzaros she'iru bahem. There are days on the Jewish calendar when the Jewish community universally fasts because of the terrible tragedies that happen on these days. And says the Rambam, what is the objective? Why do we do this? What's the point? Do we want to make people suffer? Do we want to make people be hungry all day and uncomfortable and have a headache? What's the reason? Says the Rambam, Kedei la'orer halavavos. The objective of this is to arouse us. V'liftoach darkei hatshuva. The objective of every public fast day is to give time for contemplation, is to give time, liftoach darkei hatshuva, it's to open up the pathway and to carve a space for ourselves to start thinking seriously about tshuva. Because we all have busy lives. And we're not going to make time for this if we don't set it aside on the calendar in advance. How many of us during a regular week, when we have children or grandchildren and everything's happening and so many emails and so many messages and so many commitments and so many things that we need to do, how many of us actually make time to think, la'orer halavavos, how many of us inspire ourselves, and liftoach darkei tshuva, how many people think on a regular week about tshuva? If it's not Elul, if it's not Rosh Hashanah, if it's not Yom Kippur, who's thinking about this? Says the Rambam, we need to make time during the year. So yes, the days in which we have chosen to do that are days which anyway are very sad and tragic days for the Jewish people. But the point of those days is really to start us on that path of thinking about tshuva, of understanding where it is that our minds need to be, of understanding what it is that we need to do, how we can better perfect ourselves, what it is that we are expected to be doing. When we think about what it is that happened in the days of our forefathers, it's a time for us to think very critically about ma'aseinu harayim, about our own parts of life that need some introspection, that require our examination. The same terrible things that were going on back then, the sinas chinam, it's still going on today, says the Rambam. And we have the opportunity on these public days of commemoration to think about what we have done. Like the Navi Zechariah says, forget about the fasting. Think more, and more importantly is to consider how well we're doing in the taking care of others, the sensitivity that we have to those who are around us. And therefore, says the Rambam, that really is what the objective of a public fast day is all about. It's not about the minutiae of the fasting, the showering, the eating, the whatever else we're going to do or not do on a fast day. It's more important that we think about the overall perspective, that this gives us an opportunity to understand ourselves better, to think about where our lives are holding, where our communities are headed, what it is that we can further enhance in the lives of ourselves and our friends, and what it is that perhaps we can be doing a little bit differently because of this special day of introspection that we have been given by our great sages so many thousands of years ago. So